going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Mr. Vice President, there's a saying in my community, you're dipping into the Kool-Aid and you don't even know the flavor. You need to come to the city of Newark and see the reforms that we put in place.
If nothing else, two nights of Democratic presidential debates had entertaining moments, and that probably was not the best one. But did they move the needle for voters? We are talking about winners, losers, and more on the Democratic road to the White House. My guests are political analyst Drew Elins, Charles Wilson, chair of the D.C. Democratic Party, and Christine Pelosi, member of the DNC Executive Committee, and yes, daughter of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. We also have you, our listeners, commenting tonight. What do you think about the last 2 days of Democratic debates? Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you, one and all, for joining this conversation.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Ms. Pelosi, Christine, can you hear me?
You all are having too much fun in the studio.
Oh, I know. But not as much fun as the candidates seemed to have last night. Much of that fun at the expense of Vice President Joe Biden. Boy, I tell you, he really was hammered last night. Let's take a listen to a bit of what happened last night between the Vice President and Kamala Harris.
And in 2019 in America, for a Democrat to be running for president with a plan that does not cover everyone, I think is without excuse.
Boy, I tell you, I want to start with you, Christine. A lot of discussion about health care, arguably the Democrats' signature issue. But I must admit, a lot of confusion. I needed an abacus. I needed a Texas Instrument calculator, just going all the way back. Your thoughts on that discussion?
Well, I will say this, as I have a candidate in 2020. It's called Nancy Pelosi for Speaker again. I'll be real clear. I'm with Mom. I'm for keeping the House. And therefore, I look to the stage, hopefully only one in the fall, not two nights of this, but I look to all the people running for president and I say, okay, who can lift up the entire country? Who has the vision, the values, the ideas to bring people together? And instead of reliving and relitigating 2016, who's building on 2018? The women, the people of color who came out and ran and won the most diverse Congress in the history. So when I look at through that lens, and of course, saving the baby, my mother's sixth child, she birthed five of us, but her sixth child, the Affordable Care Act, obviously we want to protect our care and we want to build and strengthen that and be able to cover everyone. And so those are the things, those are the positive agendas. And of course, on the checks and balances side, getting rid of the white nationalist racist in the White House. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, that's what I was looking for. And that's what I was hoping was going to be the road to the presidency, bringing us together, being proud of ourselves as Democrats, and having people that, frankly, the 250 Democratic members of Congress that I'd like to see in the House of Representatives would be proud to run with and work with. What I got instead were sound bites, a cage match. The road to the presidency was a couple of tracks of bumper cars. And I think CNN did it for the ratings. Some of the lines were funny, but I think that a lot of those people on the stage, deserved a lot better and deserved the opportunity to go deeper and connect with the American people. So we've got to do better in the fall.
Drew, go ahead. Your thoughts about this.
I was going to say, I agree with Ms. Pelosi. One of the things that I noticed is that the CNN did a great job, phenomenal job of trying to pit everyone against each other. And unfortunately, too many on the stage on both nights weren't very good about pivoting. You would have Cory Booker did a really good job of pivoting back to what the real issue at hand is, beating Donald Trump. We had Marianne Williamson. We had some of the other folks, Elizabeth Warren, some of the other people who tried to pivot, including Bernie Sanders, although he yelled all night. he too waved his hands, too much. But anyway, I digress. But the point was, they needed to be better about being able to pivot, because this way that cage match that they set up, the way the CNN did it, it was just too much of that. And unfortunately, they didn't pivot. But if we want to be real, even with all the hits that were coming at people, folks should have been much better prepared in their responses.
You agree with that, Charles?
I do. But, you know, I have a somewhat different opinion. I think it's okay to get a little scrappy right now. It's still very early in the process. We're like 7 months away from the Iowa caucuses. So it's okay for people to take off the gloves a little bit. Because, you know, when we get to the general election, you know, I'm sure the Republican Party is at home taking notes and saying, okay, we got this, we got that. And they're prepared for whoever the Democratic nominee is. And if you think now it's dirty, we didn't need to wait till the general election and when Donald Trump is on the stage and when he starts calling people by names and disrespecting people and their supporters and all that bad stuff, I would say. So I think, you know, getting a little scrappy now is helping whoever the nominee is be better prepared.
But that was the point, though. They didn't pivot in the way that they should have. And some of the answers to even the hits that many of them took, they didn't have a strong enough response, because they should have been prepared. Everything that came out last night that was pitted against one another, they should have already known it was going to come. And that was the issue. And so I guess maybe this is their training ground?
I don't know. I think we're all kind of surprised by that, because we're all on Twitter and Facebook and, you know, we see what our friends type and it's like, okay, how was Joe not prepared the last debate? He knew somebody was going to come at him.
Like, but let me say this, because here's the thing. First of all, you had again tonight. You had two nights. You had a basketball team. You had a football team. I mean, you had so many people. So how do you? The only way that you could really prepare for this is if you were a quarterback and the other 11 guys on the other side, you could see them coming at you. Because again, listen to this, and I think this is critical. This is Cory Booker challenging Joe Biden's argument about not sharing private conversations about mass deportations with President Obama.
Mr. Vice President, you can't have it both ways. You invoke President Obama more than anybody in this campaign. You can't do it when it's convenient and then dodge it when it's not.
Christine, that sounds like a Joe Biden takedown. I would argue that he said that he was going to be ready this time, and I think he may have been ready for Kamala Harris, but probably wasn't ready for the others on the stage. Christine.
Well, I'm going to say, thank you. I would say two things about that. First of all, I thought that was a cheap shot, frankly, and I'll tell you why. Joe Biden, it's clear that he's going to stand by Barack Obama. He's going to be loyal to the man who appointed him. And I do think, or, you know, nominated him to be vice president and serve with him. I do think that as a matter of loyalty, he shouldn't go out and say, well, yeah, I told him it was wrong and he did it anyway. I think he was very careful when he wrote his book. Biden was that he talked to the president before he put out that he had been concerned, for example, about going after Osama bin Laden. And Obama said, no, we've got to go. And Biden, you know, talked about that and said, no, this man has a steel spine. So I would make a different argument, which is before you go spilling everything about what happened in private, it may have looked bad and it landed a punch from Cory Booker last night, but it would have looked a lot worse if Joe Biden started coming up with a list of things that Barack did wrong against Joe's advice. I think that would look terrible. And I think for people who love Barack Obama and revere Michelle Obama, to have his former vice president tear him down would have been a bad look. I personally think, and I tweeted last night, I think Julian Castro did it better. Because he said, we were at the same table, Mr. Vice President. When Biden said to him, well, I didn't hear you publicly posing, you know, at cabinet meetings, I thought he did it more elegantly. He said, Mr. Vice President, we were both at that table. The difference is that one of us seems to have learned since then and the other hadn't. I thought that was far more devastating. It was still loyal to Barack Obama, but as I said, it was a pretty devastating blow to Biden that he hadn't seen the impacts of the policies play out, and they hadn't seen the cruelty of Donald Trump, who did what Barack Obama specifically was asked to do and refused to do, which is to separate minor children from their parents at the border.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about 2 days of the Democratic presidential debates. What do you think? Did you watch? And if you did, what did you take from it? And if you didn't, why not? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Wanted to say this, and I wanted to get your opinion about this, Drew. The two most Googled candidates from both nights. Last night, Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, most Googled the night before, Marianne Williamson. Now, we don't know whether or not this is traction, but certainly people were curious about both of these. And I want to start with Gabbard, because this is what she said about Kamala Harris last night. And I must say that this was truly interesting.
Well, you actually blocked evidence from being revealed that would have freed them until you were forced to do so. There is no excuse for that. And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah. That, I felt that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that Tulsi Gabbard did, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard did, was do the same thing that she tried to call out Senator Kamala Harris from the first debate, is to lift herself up by going after someone. So she said that about Senator Harris, about Joe Biden. But this was her time. And ever since then, she's been trying to go after Senator Harris through social media. And then she had her moment on stage. Again, one of the things is that what Senator Harris realized is that she is also has a target on her as well, because she is rising, or she was rising in the polls, and she's still at the very, very top of the top six or seven that's on the stage. So people were interested to hear what she had to say, but I'm pretty sure that when they Google her, they're going to find some very interesting things about her, and I'm just going to leave it like that.
Well, let's
but
not I, leave but, it like that. But
her views on Assad, her views on Al-Qaeda, her views that she has are somewhat out of step and out of line. And so for me, it's fine for you to Google. You do need to do that. You need to find out from people. She went out with her hit piece, and once again, love Senator Harris. She was not ready. And that goes back to my earlier point. You have to be ready for things that you already know that is your weakness or your perceived weakness.
If you're going to dish it out, you need to be able to take it.
It's not even about being able to dish it out, being able to take it. Everybody has a weakness. You need to go ready to prepare to respond to whatever that particular weakness is.
Charles, your thoughts real quick before I go to the phone lines.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't forget that, you know, those attacks last night, these lower tier candidates are trying to make it to September for the next round of debates. And in order to do that, some probably feel they have to say something they want to give some juice to the conversation.
Mm-hmm. I like that
and,
juice.
Yes, they do.
And we'll see in the polls if that helps. I know it helped Kamala the first time when she went after Joe. She got notoriety. Let's see if it happens with the others.
Real quick, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about 2 days of Democratic debates. What do you think? Give me a call. Lines are open. Joanne, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Quickly, you got 30 seconds.
Very quickly. I've been enjoying the debates so far. Just one comment. I'm an African-American woman, and I would like to see Kamala Harris. First of all, congratulations to her for getting this far, but I'd like to see her have a little bit less anger, it seems, when she's attacking Joe Biden than she is. She just seems angry when she's attacking him, and it appears that she's an angry black woman, if you will. I'm impressed with her accomplishments and how far she's come, but I'd like to see a little bit less anger when she's debating, especially towards Joe Biden.
Thank you, Joanne. Okay, Drew.
So, I actually just mentioned this on social media. I think one of the things that our general media has done a good job at doing is try to paint her as angry and going after him, and that actually was not the case. What she did was, as a prosecutor would, is prosecute the case. Whenever someone tries to bob and weave from answering a question, especially from the very first debate, Vice President Biden wasn't ready. So she was like, no, let's go back to this. Let's get back to that. So I don't see that as being angry. I see that as someone who's saying, no, let's go back. Let's argue the point. This is a debate. This is not for me to kiki ha ha ha. No, mm-hmm. This is, I need to know your answer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you get this from from other black women, is that when a black woman is ready to say, I want to state my case, or just be very firm in their answer, that they come across as being angry. She was not being angry. She said it then, and she smiled and kept it moving. So I don't understand that whole analysis, but everybody has their opinion.
I need to take a break. When we come back, more of this discussion on 2 days of Democratic debates, the winners, the losers, and what I think is probably the moment of both debates. We're going to hear about that next. I want to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM. Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a bit.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about the winners, losers, and what's ahead on the Democratic road to the White House. My guests are political analyst Drew Elans, Charles Wilson, chair of the D.C. Democratic Party, and Christine Pelosi, member of the DNC Executive Committee, and yes, daughter of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Want to hear what you think about the debates? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Mr. Warren, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I did not watch the debates and have not yet, because I think it's almost like watching preseason football. I think it's just I think it's kind of early in this thing that it's going to be so many people going to end up dropping out for one reason or another because the race is so crowded. Now, I also believe that I'm a firm believer that if Joe Biden would win the nomination and would say that he would run for one term, that he could pick Kamala Harris as a running mate, and then she would then be primed to be the first African-American woman president, because I think we're living in the dark ages by never having a woman president in this country.
Hmm. Have you made up your mind, Mr. Warren?
Yeah, I would like to see. That's the ticket I would like to see.
So,
like,
okay, see. So you say Joe. It doesn't matter to you. You've already made up your mind.
Vice President Joe Biden next week, I'll be able to say to him that I think it would be in his best interest, because of his age and him running for one term, that he would pick Kamala Harris as a running mate, and she would then be primed as president of the United States.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, we should say there are lots of seasoned senior citizens running for the Democratic ticket, not to mention the man who's in the White House right now. So this, apparently, this may be the year of senior work. I don't know. Mr. Warren, thank you so much. Let's go to Michael calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Michael, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing? I just wanted to say that I think Joe Biden should stand on his own. I was with him. Doesn't even get you in the club. Okay? So him saying, Barack, you know, like they said last night, he invoked Barack a whole lot of times. But when his record comes up, he's always, you know, a little bit shaky. You know, I worked on his first campaign. I like Biden, but it's time for him to move on. And
wow.
Kamala Harris, she's doing fine. She's not angry. I'm a retired probation officer, and that's the way prosecutors go. You can't be demure when you're trying to state your point because the people will ignore you.
Okay. Great point, Michael. Thank you so much. What do you think about that, Christine? Joe Biden running for one term and a Kamala Harris as a vice presidential on the vice presidential ticket. Do you think that is a possibility? Could this be a kumbaya moment? They don't seem too friendly right now.
Oh, I think they're fine. Look, I think Kamala's running for president, so why don't we let the vote shake out and see what the voters think? You know, I've known Kamala since law school. She's a little ahead of me at UC Hastings, and we briefly overlapped in the San Francisco DA's office when she was the head of the career criminal division, and I was in the sexual assault domestic violence prosecution unit. So as Drew was saying earlier, that's a prosecutor making her case. I saw her win in the courtroom with the same manner that we saw her address. Now we're going back memory lane. Sessions, Barr, Kavanaugh. So I say memory lane because it feels like, I don't know, we're in Trump years, so it feels like that was all like 10 years ago.
It does seem quite some time ago.
Trump years.
Yeah.
Feels like a time ago. But I also want to just say something else about watching the debates and watching people campaign. The whole political process in America is deeply rooted, right, in patriarchy and white supremacy. So it was really designed that you would have, free, white, abled men who would be competing with each other. And, you know, you go back to things that we romanticize now, like, oh, have the Lincoln-Douglas debates. Go read that transcript and the things they were saying about each other. This makes last night look mild.
Mm-hmm.
So people have always had, I think, a very rough and tumble politics. What's different is watching debates through a different lens. So, for example, when Joe Biden gets on the stage and shakes Kamala's hand and jokingly says, "Go easy on me, kid."
Mm-hmm.
Look, I've known Joe Biden forever. That's how he talks. But to say that on the stage with the first African-American woman to be at center stage of a presidential debate, not such a good call. Vice News did a video this morning where they made fun of Joe Biden for not being able to get his message out during the debate. He has a stuttering condition that he's talked about publicly for years. It was a real cheap shot, and people in the disability community, who, by the way, didn't hear their issues talked about at all last night or the night before, were like, what kind of ableism is this, right? And you go down the line to some things that if you see somebody in a professional setting that is designed for older white men, they haze each other all the time. But a minute a woman does that, a minute a person of color does that, suddenly people say, oh, she's mad. Oh, it's another way of saying he doesn't belong here.
But here, let me, I'm not used
to her being here.
But so let me ask you this, Christine.
Have to be careful about that.
And it's really interesting that you say that, because when Joe Biden said to Kamala Harris, "Yeah, go easy on me, kid," the first thing that I thought about was Sarah Palin walking up during the debate and saying, "Can I call you Joe?" during that debate. And I think it's really interesting when you look at the dynamic where Sarah Palin was allowed to to be familiar and try to be disarming. But again, as you said, when it's a man, particularly a white man talking to a black woman and trying to be equally as disarming, they, or familiar, it's seen differently. It's seen through a different lens.
I'm a Southerner. So yeah. When she said that, I remember that.
And can I call you Joe?
I was like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
Like, just for so many reasons, you cannot. But that's neither. I'm sorry. Because you just took me
the
back.
Angry black woman.
Just made me angry. I just got angry. No, but it was, I was like, no, you cannot. Like, you cannot. And even because of the setting, you cannot, right? At the minimum, senator, right? Like, you can't do that. In this day and age. So I think everyone should be addressed out of that thing. Like, I was trying to go back and said, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, Senator Harris, I'm very clear on making sure these people are running for the highest office in our country. And I think they should definitely engage in that way. I know you're trying to be familiar, but it's just too much going on for all of us to be seeing things through different lens, especially where, the country is led by the guy that's occupying the White House.
Did this move the needle, Charles, in any way, shape, or form? We saw Harris rise during the last debate. Some would say that Biden took a fall after the second debate. Who, in your mind, did well?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I tell my friends all the time, I was like, you know, a lot of us like to watch the debates at home, you know, in our comfort of our house. I encourage people to get outside of their house and go to a debate watch party and see the reactions of other people. And one of the things that we've done as a party is move our debate parties around the city. So one night we're in Anacostia and the next night we're on K Street. Mm-hmm. And in Anacostia, you know, I'll just say it, Harris was a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, folks, there was a mix between Warren and Biden. So it's just good to kind of hear other people's perspectives on how they see a particular candidate, what they like, what they don't, what scares them, what excites them.
Hmm.
And you kind of get a sense of that when you go to these public events and not just talk to your spouse at home.
What scares them? I was struck by that.
You know,
what scares them?
I heard the angry black woman comment about Kamala.
Really?
Yeah. And I heard Elizabeth Warren is too intense. You know, so,
really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then I also heard Joe Biden is too old. You know, so, and Corey's too new. You know, so it's like you hear all these different perspectives depending on what kind of crowd you're in.
I must say, at least for the first two comments about Elizabeth Warren being too intense, my response to that was, this is an intense business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, we are talking about President of the United States. Kamala Harris, angry? No. She's a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, this is serious business. Okay. About the old thing, haven't almost, with the exception of Barack Obama and John F. Kennedy and a couple, haven't they all been old?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, what's new? I don't know. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. And I should say in recent history, because, you know, Christine mentioned the Lincoln-Douglas debates. I don't remember that. But...
I wasn't here for that.
I wasn't here for that either. I'm just messing with you, Christine. Let me go to Paula. Paula calling from Clinton. What's on your mind, Paula?
Yes, good evening, and thank you. I did watch the debates, all four sessions of them. I didn't like the personal attacks. I did not like Ms. Harris bringing up busing for the second time. Once was enough. When they jumped on Joe Biden's record, what they don't understand or what they didn't want to understand was that that was at a different time. And unfortunately, Mr. Biden is not always capable of expressing his views in that kind of a format. Now, just because he's not a good debater doesn't mean he's not going to be the best qualified to be a president. I don't think that you have to be a bully in order to combat Mr. Trump. I don't think that at all. What I like I want to see in a president is someone who is dignified, someone who is respectful, someone who can compromise. It can't be my way or the highway for everybody all the time.
Okay. Paula, thank you so much for that. Lenora, calling from Virginia, what's on your mind?
Hello. Thank you. I did see most of both of the debates. I am enjoying it. I also agree that Kamala, I don't see her as being angry. I do see her as being being able to hold her own. And it is serious business being a president. And, you know, she's very articulate, experienced, and seasoned. And we are also looking at the fact that this could potentially be, as we know, another first with a black woman. And I applaud her. To me, Joe Biden is coming across not being able to hold his own. But I'm taking in, I know all the comments about the fact, you know, he's definitely the seasoned, experienced, you know, hands down. But it's showing that I think he needs to pick it up to deal with, you know, what's going, you know, as far as being able to just get it back to those folks. But finally, I had heard that rapper Cardi B was going to support Bernie Sanders. Have you guys heard that? And what are your thoughts?
Drew.
Why is it going to be me?
I'm the youngest.
I might not be that. He's the youngest. Charles the youngest.
They met in a nail salon.
Right, they did.
Yeah, they met in a nail salon, and I think they had a great conversation. But this is the only candidate she's actually met with, and actually people listen to her.
Right. She's going to do a video with him. I do know that. A little pop culture I try to stick to. But she is going to do a video. I think it's interesting.
Okay. that will get the attention of millennials for sure.
It will.
Yes, it would certainly get my daughter's attention. Lenora, thank you so much. I mentioned, and I promised this earlier, while the comment earlier from Cory Booker was really good, I honestly believe that this was one of the best moments from either debate. And this was Marianne Williamson talking about reparations.
Yeah. It's $500 billion, $200 to $500 billion. Payment of a debt that is owed. That is what reparations is. I'll tell you what makes me qualified. If you did the math of the 40 acres and a mule, given that there was 4 to 5 million slaves at the end of the Civil War, there were 4 to 5, and they were all promised 40 acres and a mule for every family of four. If you did the math today, it would be trillions of dollars. And I believe that anything less than $100 billion is an insult.
Like my mother would say, use your words. I just thought that she may not get any real traction, Christine, but other than maybe personal traction, because if you didn't know who Marianne Williamson was last week, you know now, Christine.
Well, and we knew, unfortunately, and, you know, we knew in California because she had said some unfortunate things about the power of positive thinking, and which, according to people who felt that they were victimized by believing in her, made them feel that they were, you know, shouldn't take the vaccines on a particular schedule, or, you know, her implication to people who were fat or people who were ill. That they somehow that this was, you know, a lot of body shaming was going on. So there's an undercurrent there that, you know, she has to answer for now. Look, vaccines work, full stop. Vaccinate your kids.
There you go.
Don't mess around, period. But that said, yes, she did have a couple of things, to say in the way that she said them that were big and broad and deep. And this goes back to my initial comment about the debates, is that we need something big and broad and deep, a compassionate vision of the country. And the setup wasn't really designed for that. But knowing that, it then falls upon the candidates to be able to pivot. They have choices when they're asked questions. They can ask with a jab, or they can ask with something deeper. I actually thought Cory Booker did a good job. He sort of liked being attacked. He seemed very excited when he went after Joe Biden, and Joe Biden
went after his record in Newark, because then he made the line about Kool-Aid, and he was able to talk about, essentially, he was there cleaning up structural problems that Biden's crime bill had helped to create. So I think that, but the way that he defended himself, he used humor, he used in a folksy way, I thought that was really good. And so I think what we should take away from this again is, who on this stage can be president of the United States? Who on this stage do you want 300 Democrats running for the House and Senate for control of government? Who do you want? Look at Ruth Ginsburg. She planks for us. We need to do some planks for her, right? Look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the other members of the Supreme Court. By a thread, by a vote, so many of our rights are hanging. Who do you want leading the charge for the whole country? That's what this, I think, should be about. And again, I think, you know, as Drew said, the campaigns have to be much more prepared. There's a statement ascribed to J.D. Salinger. If I had more time, I'd write you a shorter letter. Well, they need to take more time so right. They can have shorter answers.
Now, Christine, you said something that also really struck me when you were talking about big and broad messages and ideas. The current president, and I remember this as I was standing on the floor of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, that no matter what you think about Donald Trump, his ideas, truthful or not, were big and broad. No matter what you think about Barack Obama, his ideas were big and broad. I saw last night neither big nor broad. And I would argue that even the biggest may have, I don't know. I don't hear big voices. I don't hear, I don't really hear big ideas. Beto O'Rourke, when he was running for Senate in Texas, was big and broad. And no matter how tall he is, he seems to have shrunk. Mm-hmm. Charles, I'll start with you. What's happening to the big and broad in this campaign?
Well, I think the first set of debates kind of set the tone for the second. In that, I think, you know, obviously in last night, folks felt like they had to come after Joe Biden so they can rise in the polls. They saw what it did for Kamala, and they said, okay, maybe it can work for me. I don't think it worked for most. And then the first night, it was like, okay, it was like the left versus the world. And you saw Elizabeth and Bernie kind of like stick together and kind of fend off the enemies. But, you know, I think the smart campaigns, those debates in September, you'll start to see the cream rise. Mm-hmm. And say, okay, that's the big broad. These are the big broad vision candidates, and it'll separate them from everybody else.
And you know, when I think back to President Barack Obama's run, it wasn't the idea around, yes, healthcare, yes, I remember those things kind of talked about, but it was about the feeling. Mm-hmm. And the lifting up of everybody. Mm-hmm. When you think about his speech in 2004, when he talks about there's no red America, there's no white, there's, you know, it's the United States of America. When you think about that, that's what brought everybody up. When it comes to the guy that owns this up there in the White House, mm-hmm. when it comes to him, you know, it was the negative version of that. Mm-hmm. And he spoke to the negativity and those who felt like because of all the immigrants and all of this other stuff, because of seeing, you know, this family in the White House for so long, I feel disenfranchised. And so he talked about the big, broad ideas that touched them in a space that made them want to come out. I remember a good friend of mine who does a lot of Florida politics who said it was an overperformance in the Republican districts because some of those folks came out who didn't ever vote before because of how he made them feel. Now,
and you could say that for Obama.
That's what I'm saying. It was about how he felt. But the other thing about Obama, clearly, not only it was about how we felt, but they did the groundwork on that. They did the ground campaign. They did the voter education and the voters getting out the vote. So they did that work for new voters. So regardless, if whoever our nominee is, Well, they have to have the big ideas. They have to talk about how they're going to get there. They have to talk about the balance, et cetera. They got to shift and all these other talks that things that us political pundits and us in this whole bubble needs to like to talk about. But whoever the nominee is, they must have that sincere ground game in order to take us over to where we're trying to go, which is take back the White House.
Christine, do you believe that this campaign needs to be more than just beating Donald Trump? I would argue that there are probably some people who will just come out of the woodwork and vote against the man whose language, whose manner, whose morals, whose ideas are questionable, no matter what their political leanings are. But then there were some other people who are giving all of the candidates much more scrutiny, and they're trying to put their emotions aside. Which do you think, Christine, will play out more? The emotional anti-Trump or those that are scrutinizing and trying to figure out what's best for the country outside of their emotions?
Well, when we look at 2018, and really the fight to win in 2018 began in the fall of 2016. I mean, 2 days after the election, then leader of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was on the phone with the grassroots patients groups saying, okay, we need to protect our care. We know he's coming after health care. So how can we organize people? So it wasn't just a matter of resisting Trump. We did a lot of that, but we had to affirmatively protect our care. We had to affirmatively bring people out of the shadows and speaking their stories. Otherwise, they literally were going to lose. Early on, the people in the bubble, the pollsters told us in March of 2017, well, you can save Social Security disability insurance. Remember when they went after that? You can save Medicare, but you can't save Medicaid because nobody knows anybody who's on Medicaid. So we needed faces of Medicaid. So veterans and children organized themselves into the little lobbyists. Children with disabilities were out there pounding the pavement, pounding the airwaves, telling their stories, 10,000 grassroots. Mm-hmm. To Drew's point, doing the work in the communities to say, come out here, tell your healthcare story. We're going to do something that's going to protect ourselves. We're going to unite as a community. And when someone gets up to tell a story and they're going to get attacked by Rush Limbaugh, attacked by Donald Trump, we're going to surround that person with love and support. So I do think that we have to look to how we won for the people. And it was certainly a combination of, yes, people saying, this isn't the America I want to live in. I don't want him as president anymore. But also, affirmatively, I care about my health care. I care about my community. I care about wanting to make a difference. And so I think what you really saw on the stage was, I wouldn't call them necessarily left and right, although you can certainly design a spectrum that way. I think that there are two schools of thought that I see in the Democratic Party in my travels. One of them is the restoration theory of let's get back to the America that we know and love. That was Joe Biden's closing argument. That was the sense that a lot of people had of let's just get rid of Trump and let's just do some reclamation work here to mend the social fabric, you know, stop the racism and the sexism and all the bad isms. But then there's another group that's saying big, bold, structural change. And that's the Bernie Elizabeth Warren group. And then you have the other candidates who are sort of trying to figure out what lane they're going to be in. I think ultimately the Democrats will nominate a ticket that unites both a reformer and a restorer because people are afraid of big structural change. People are afraid of a transition that just throws them out of insurer-based healthcare, even though they'd certainly like to transition. People are afraid of the changing economy and the future of work. You know, my daughter's 10. The job she'll have in 25 years may not even be created yet. So we have to think long-term, careers, not gigs. How do we create opportunity? So I think we need need that kind of vision to really take us onto a higher plane. And I think that you're going to get that. Because again, that's what Barack Obama talked about, the future of work, winning the future, right? What does that look like? So I think that's really critically important that the candidates spend a little less time
on creating a gotcha moment and a little bit more time telling me, is there a place for me in America? And if so, what does that place look like? Because Donald Trump's telling everybody that they all can get ahead if only the people on this phone call would just get out of the way. Well, I don't want to get out of the way. So how do I stay and make room?
I want Drew to hear this, because this was, and we don't have the full breadth of Kamala Harris's comment about Donald Trump, but I will say that this comment was, you know, I heard almost a dramatic, you know, black and white horror movie laugh in the background, because this comment from Kamala Harris touched me deeply.
Donald Trump has predatory nature and predatory instincts. And the thing about predators is this. By their very nature, they prey on people they perceive to be weak.
There was a much longer piece to that. But the fact that she called the president a predator, and so many people so many other people have called him, you know, so many things. And I must admit that that was dark. It just put me in a mindset of, you know, unlike, you know, what you just said, Christine, who, you know, when you're talking about big and bold and looking to the future, that same darkness I saw during the Republican National Convention. I had no idea what that portended then for where we are now. And so it just seems to me that, I don't know. It was just so unnerving to me, because it just seemed to me to just put a description on where we are, Drew.
Yeah, I was about to say that is where we are. And it, when I think about, again, I can't even call him president, because he has disgraced the office so much. And so when you took it into terms, when she did that on the campaign trail and called him a predator, and then when she said it again, it's just describing him exactly who we are. Just imagine if we had had those descriptors back in 2016 to really get us to understand the kind of thinking he is, because in every aspect of his life, that is how he's been.
I think that's a good way to end this conversation. I want to thank all of you for joining this conversation. Charles Wilson, Drew Elans, and Christine Pelosi. Say hello to your mom. Thank you so much. It was an honor to have you and, of course, Charles on the program. Drew is family. So we hope that all of you will become family. So again, thank you so much. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, August 1st. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.
The Howard University.